Coach, we'll start just by saying congratulations, 12-4. Certainly your team has dealt with quite a bit. How does it feel to finish a year 12-4 and to be looking ahead to a first-round bye?
Feels good.
Hold on. There we go. Yep.
I remember Bill Parcells a long time ago had said that a head coach's job is to get the most out of his team, and sometimes that might be 5 wins or 9 wins or a Super Bowl championship. I wondered at that time how a coach knows best out of a team is, but I'm asking you now, do you agree with that, and do you think that 12-4 is the best that this team could have done with all the things that you had to face this year?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, as a coach, you try to, as Bill said, do the best you can every week. And, you know, you got to take each week as it comes, you know, and try to take the best, you know, take advantage of the opportunities that you have and attack the opponents the best that you can. So, you know, I don't really know, you know, how to put an expectation on a team. It's a week-to-week thing. I felt like every week we played, we had a chance to win. We obviously didn't win all of them, but I thought we competed well each week, so I'll let somebody else judge that, I guess.
Bill, this may be a minor thing, but it seemed like you made the differentiation between winning the bye and advancing to the second round of the playoffs, as how you termed it with us in the media. Is that just me overanalyzing things, or did you specifically phrase it that way for a reason?
I don't know. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, we don't have to win a playoff game this week. We're already in the second round of the playoffs, so that's just the way I saw it. I don't know.
It's not a message to your team that this is not a week off. You didn't earn a vacation. You earned.
No, I mean, had we not won yesterday, we would have been playing this week, and now we don't have to do that. So that was the opportunity.
We were talking last week about your defense specifically, but your team in general. It's a fairly young team, younger than some of the teams that you've gone to the playoffs with in the past. How much consideration do you give that as you're preparing them for what they'll see in 2 weeks?
Well, not very much. I mean, these guys have played a whole season of football, so you know, I don't think anybody's a rookie anymore after 16 regular season games. That's a lot of experience under the belt. So, you know, I think it's about the teams and that play well at this time of year right now. I don't think it has anything to do with experience. I mean, I remember 2001, we had a quarterback that didn't have any experience, and you know, he let us do a championship. So I don't think that's the criteria. I think the criteria is playing well, being able to operate under pressure as a team and perform well in critical situations. And that's what we're going to try to do.
How do you think your team is doing in those areas right now?
Well, I mean, we're 12-4, but that doesn't really mean anything. Everybody's 0-0 heading into the playoffs. So it'll all be about the next matchup and how we do on that. A week from Saturday night.
You've got three possible opponents coming up. What happens this week? Do you spend any time on those three opponents? Do you divide them equally in thirds? Or do you just work on yourselves this week and get yourself ready and fix your own house?
I'd say a little bit of all those probably. We certainly, there are things we need to work on regardless of who we play, so that'll be important for us. We want to get some preliminary work done on all three opponents, but we really won't know who it is until the Cincinnati-San Diego game on Sunday afternoon. So, you know, I think we'll do a little bit of work, but, you know, we really can't zero in on anybody until we get past the weekend. So we'll be prepared for when that moment arrives. We'll have all our work done so we can really dig into it, and I don't want to say we would ignore those teams. That's certainly not accurate. I mean, we'll work on the three possible opponents, but not like we would if we knew who we were going to play.
Obviously, one of the stories of yesterday was LeGarrette Blount and one of the most productive games these Patriots have ever seen as a franchise. When you traded for him, what did you think you were getting? What did you envision he could be for this team as he earned a role and then built on that into the year?
Well, you know, LeGarrette's played in the league for 3 years, so I mean, I think there's quite a bit of film, and you know, there's a number of looks at him in different situations as a football player, and I think you know, he's shown that over the course of this year, pretty much what we thought it would be. I mean, he's a big back that has good quickness and running skills and vision. Catches the ball well. He's been durable. And he can get a tough yard, and he can create some yards in space. I think he's been a good complement to our football team. He's fit in well in the locker room. Players, teammates like him. You know, he's been out there for us every day, and he's given us a good solid day's work on a regular basis. So I think he's earned everybody's respect. He certainly carried the load yesterday. That was a pretty impressive performance, about as good as anyone I've ever been a part of. Franchise record, but he put the team on his back, and he carried us a long way.
And scout number 31 gave him a good write-up when you...
He sure did, yeah. I did. I talked to Akeem before we made the trade, and, I think Akeem, made some comments yesterday about it, but he, you know, everything Akeem said is exactly what LeGarrette's been.
What did he tell you ahead? I mean, what is that conversation like between you and Akeem?
Well, I mean, Akeem had been on the team with him. He had been with him on a daily basis and played against him in practice sessions, that kind of thing, and knew what it was like to have him on a team. And he felt he would be a good addition to this team, which that, you know, speaks a lot. I mean, a player wants somebody, on the team and thinks they'll be a good teammate, then that's worth something because he's been with him for 3 years.
Do players ever give bad scouting reports on that? I mean, does anybody say, that guy's a real jerk, we don't need him?
Plenty of times.
And it does say something about your perception of Akeem, that you want his opinion. So, because if he weren't the type of player that you had utmost respect for, his opinion might not mean as much to you.
Well, that's true, too. I don't think you solicit necessarily, everybody's opinion is on everything. But there are, some players that know more than you do, or other, some people just, that know more than you do, have better experience than you do, and you take that into consideration.
You know, with LeGarrette, he's kind of an interesting case because he's so big for a running back. He's a really big back. But, you watch him play, and you hear commentators especially, and they always want to talk about him being a big, physical, rumbling, stumbling type of back. And then you watch him, and he does cut quite a bit. You mentioned that he's got pretty good speed for back of his size. Do you coach him a little bit differently to try to bring out one side or the other of those two qualities that he's got, or do you try to push him in one direction or another?
Not really. A little bit sometimes situationally, but I think for the most part, a player like a Garrett who's had a lot of production experience running the ball, has to rely on his instincts, and those are split section decisions he has to make, whether to try to run over a guy, run around him, give him a move, outrun him, and those are just based on the angles and the relationships and what he sees in that split second of time. But certainly there's a lot of coaching points about running the ball relative to pad level and setting up moves and taking advantage of space and, using your blocking patterns and so forth and so on that are all a part of it. But I think he has pretty good running instincts, period. But, we've tried to do the best that we can. I think Coach Fierce has done an excellent job, and Josh McDaniels and the coaches that have been with him, trying to, help him get the most out of what he has. But I think he has a lot of natural running ability and instincts. He's a smart football player, so so I'd say a lot of it's really him.
I left here last week, and I told a lot of my friends that I don't know. I just get the impression from Coach Belichick that he really likes this team. Like maybe he sees something special about this team. And then I heard Rob Ninkovich talk yesterday about this being the most mentally tough team that he's played on. If the first part is true, is the mental toughness one of the reasons why you think this team might be special?
We're going to find out.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
This is the time of year when, one play, one mistake, one right decision can make a difference in your entire season. So every team playing at this time of year has those same challenges ahead of them, and we'll see how we're able to handle them. But we've been in a lot of close games. We've been in a lot of tough situations. We've been competitive. It hasn't always been perfect. It hasn't always worked out. But for the most part, we've been there at the end throwing punches, in the ring in the last round. And not all of them landed, but a lot of them have. And so, hopefully we'll at least be in that position and be competitive.
I also saw Rob standing there with that big beard, and it made me think of the Red Sox and how they, you know, put themselves together. What would your reaction be if your entire locker room started growing the big Red Sox beards? Would that be a great team unifying thing, or would you be, you know, handing out razors?
Yeah, well, I mean, in Gillette Stadium, that's probably...
there you go, right.
Company man.
I think probably that would be the answer to that question. I know there's a lot of razors in that locker room, players and coaches' locker room. They get us a big supply of those.
Have you ever had a beard? Never seen one in a photo.
Two-week vacation. Had,
you know, yeah, just go without shaving for a few days.
Nothing Ninkovich-like, though.
No.
Birds
no,
living in there, animals.
I don't think I could grow one that thick. Rob's got a good...
Well, I think that'd be the end of the whole Gillette sponsorship, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be a difficult thing. I'd have to rename the stadium because the coach has a different beard. You have, I mean, speaking of toughness, the obvious question is for Logan Mankins yesterday to come back out there. I mean, he goes out. You could hear the collective groan and gasp all around New England as people were really worried this was another major injury. You said after the game he's as tough as anyone you've been around. What does that mean?
It means I've been coaching for 39 years and, you know, played a few years poorly before that. But he's just got an incredible amount of physical and mental toughness. And, he played an entire season on a torn ACL. He wants to be out on the field practicing. He wants to be there with his teammates. He can certainly has a high pain threshold, and he's able to play through a lot. Let's say he's pretty rare. I mean, I've been around a lot of tough players, and I'm not saying he's the toughest, but I would put him right up there. I can't think of anybody I would put ahead of him. Let's put it that way. He's got an amazing toughness and grit and passion for the game. And when I saw him get carried off, which that in itself is pretty unusual for Logan. I mean, he rarely needs assistance. That wasn't a good sign. And then to hear the next series, well, Logan's ready to go back in there.
Not surprised by that either.
It was kind of a dream. But again, you can't ever count him out. He's special.
Who else is on that list?
Well, I put Lawrence Taylor up there for sure. I've seen Taylor play with injuries that play well too. I would definitely put him up there.
You mentioned the self-scouting aspect of this week here leading up. One thing I looked at, and I don't know if this is a concern for you or not, I found interesting that Julian Edelman's catches as related to Brady's completions have gone up from 38% to 50% to 64% in the last three games. Those types of numbers, are those concerning, or do you say that's our number one receiver, that's the guy that was open that day making plays, we won those games, or do you say we're too Edelman-centric?
I think you go back and take a look at everything, Andy. It's, those are the kind of questions I think that we need to look at the film and find answers to, that, what it says on paper is, those are facts, but then sometimes the circumstances of it and that type of thing. I know yesterday was the type of game where, throwing conditions weren't great. We threw him some slip screens. Well, obviously he's the receiver on those plays. He's going to get the ball. It's a pretty high percentage play, so that's a lot different than throwing post and go patterns. Mm-hmm. And I would say sometimes the stats and not disputing the stats, but you got to give an attempt to somebody, and sometimes the quarterback's throwing the ball away, sometimes it's really not a legitimate attempt. It's just they got to put somebody down that it's in the direction of him versus a pass that's really legitimately a completable ball. So, we'll look at all those things in the passing game, the running game, defensively, red area, short yardage, goal line, kicking game, all of it, and try to see if we can find anything and there are plenty of things, but see if we can find ways to improve and play our best football a week from Saturday night. That's the goal, is just to play our best.
Just to follow up on him, he has always been a guy, and I know I go to him post-game to ask him about the game, and he's always deflecting from him to the team. He seems to be a great team-first mentality. But he also put forth a pretty impressive season in 16 games here. He stayed healthy, 100
sure
catches. From your perspective as a guy who watched him succeed when healthy but seemed to always have an injury or not be able, How enjoyable was it to watch him have this season and finally be, put it all together?
I mean, it was great because nobody works harder than Julian. I mean, he comes early, stays late, works hard on the field. He's a tough kid. He gets banged up, and you know, he's not 100%. And it takes a lot to keep him off the field, practice field as well. I mean, he loves to practice and you know, returns kicks, been involved in the kicking game. You know, first play of the game, he comes in there and, you know, blocking Leonard. I mean, he doesn't take any plays off. So, you know, you love to see a guy like that have that kind of success. And as you said, he's had some setbacks along the way in his career, but it's never derailed him and hasn't taken away from his work ethic. And, you know, then this year, in a lot of ways, it's come together. It's certainly been his best year, most productive year. And you got to be happy for guys like that that work that hard and then, you know, have the results to, you know, to show for it. You know, I remember when we had Phil Simms at the Giants, he got hurt his first couple of years, and, you know, everybody's talking about him being a first-round bust and, you know, can't play and no good and, you know, get rid of him and all that. And you know, he went on to, you know, lead the team to a couple championships and have just a tremendous career. And I'm not saying it's the same, but I'm saying it's a similar situation where sometimes it's not just 1 year, it's 2 or 3 years, and then for whatever reason, those injured days are kind of past, and now the player becomes durable, and there's just really no way to know how that's going to go. But, you know, Phil went through a lot of that his first, you know, 3-4 years with the Giants, and like I said, and had just a tremendous career there. So you just never know.
Excuse my football ignorance. I know they both play wide receiver, but in your view, did Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola play the same position in your offense?
No.
What is the difference? What are you looking for differently from each of them?
Well, I mean, I just...
You're not going to throw X's and Y's at us, are
you? Yeah, I mean,
remember, he's football ignorant.
But I think most people are. I mean, I think there's an idea that they were both going to be slot receivers, and that was going to be their job. So, without getting too technical, but I'm just trying to get a sense as to how they're different in your offense.
Well, I'd say that, you know, Julian has, and of course Danny has, punt return and kickoff return skills as well, but, you know, Julian's had a lot of plays after yards after the catch, and not that Danny hasn't, but, you know, I'd say Julian probably, you know, has a little more of that. I'd say Julian's definitely been on the perimeter more than Danny has. Now, you know, because we operate at times in a lot of formations where the receivers are pretty close together, they're stacked, or, you know, they're in a group, a bunch type of set, then at that point I think, you know, well, they are kind of the same. They could easily be interchanged when they're only, you know, a few feet apart on the field. But when they're not that way, there's, you know, much higher tendency for Amendola to be inside than outside. I don't think that's any secret.
I want to get to the significance of Matthew Slater getting to the Pro Bowl. Might take a circuitous route to get there, but I was thinking about how I thought that Dan Duquette, general manager of the Red Sox a long time ago, was among the first to really see the importance of the middle reliever. And I thought Tony La Russa might be the first to really see the importance of the closer. And listening to you through the years, you were the first that I heard really focus on special teams like it was an equal third, offense, defense, special teams. Has that changed in your time in the NFL, where the special teams is really thought of as more important than it might have been years ago, or did I miss that? And with that in mind, how important is it to have Pro Bowl caliber guys on special teams?
Well, I think we'll start with the second question first. I think the quality of the special teams is always, to a certain degree, a function of your flag carrier. And we've been very fortunate here, or I've been very fortunate here as the head coach. We had Larry Izzo, who was a tremendous special teams player and leader. He was a guy that took it very seriously and got other people involved, and they saw his passion for it, and they took it more seriously, and he got them together in groups. They would watch films, and they took a lot of pride in their in those units, whether it be the kickoff team or the punt return team or whatever it happened to be. And at that time, I thought that Larry was, you know, probably the best special teams you know, leader and captain and just, you know, total player that I'd ever been around. And when we lost him, that was, you know, those are big shoes to fill. And I would say that, you know, Slater has done that. You know, he's every bit, has every bit of the impact both on the field and off the field that, you know, that Larry had. And not only does Matthew play his position well and very unselfishly with great preparation, tremendous intensity and passion for it, but he brings a lot of other people with him, and whether it's younger players or other guys in those units, the specialists, he's a great leader as well as a great player and helps the other players play better. And his example is just, you know, really second to none, the way he works on the practice field and off the field in his preparation. And then that all shows up in a lot of the production that he has, even though he gets double teamed on every punt, on every kickoff, or they're running away from him. Or you have to take him into account, and we see that in the schemes. A lot of times he draws a heavy part of the blocking, which is doing the dirty work for other guys that have, you know, better opportunities and can make plays. And yet he still is able to, you know, to be productive, even though he's getting, you know, a lot of the attention there. So he's done a tremendous job for us. Just couldn't say enough about that. And that certainly helps the overall unit, because I think you need a guy, more than one, certainly. And we have other guys that I would put in that category, you know, guys like Dane Fletcher and, you know, players like that that have been, you know, really solid guys for us and, you know, veteran guys. But, you know, from my standpoint, look, when you're a special teams coach, you think it's a third of the game. I mean, you really do. And so, you know, my first years in the league, like first 8 years in the league, I was either the head or assistant special teams coach, in addition to, you know, whatever else I was doing. So, you know, when that's part of your paycheck, I mean, you better recognize it, or, you know, I mean, you're really missing the boat. And so, you know, I was fortunate to work with some very good special teams coaches. You know, I thought when Jerry Glanville was at Detroit, I mean, I learned an awful lot from him. Floyd Reese as well. You know, and then when I had an opportunity to be on Coach Perkins' staff as a special teams coach of the Giants, that was, you know, my fifth year in the league, and, you know, I was young, but it was a tremendous opportunity. And, you know, the one thing about being a special teams coach is it really teaches you a lot about, number one, connecting with the entire team, because other than the quarterbacks, you have everybody. You have the offensive line on field goal. You have the defensive line on field goal rushers. You have all the skilled players, and, you know, they're all – and you have the kickers. And so they're all very talented, but they're all very different. You know, it's a lot different coaching a kicker than it is a linebacker, than it is an offensive lineman, mm-hmm. than it is a receiver. And you know, those positions have different personalities and dynamics. And then as a special teams coach, you also learn a lot about – field position and strategy and, you know, all the rules and everything that go into that, which are pretty complex. And when you're not the special teams coach, as I'm not, you know, right now, some of that stuff can kind of, I don't want to say pass you by, but there's so much to it that it's hard to really stay on top of it unless that's your main responsibility. And Scott O'Brien and Joe Judge have done a tremendous job for us. But, as I said, as much as I was involved in that early in my career, and at times I felt like, you know, I'd like to be doing more than this, but I learned so much, and it's been so beneficial for me throughout my career that, you know, I'm just very thankful that I had the opportunity to be involved in special teams in such an in-depth way early in my career, because that a lot of what I learned there has just been invaluable through the years.
I'm just imagining you and Jerry Glanville hanging out.
Oh, Jerry was great. I'll tell you, Jerry, I mean, I think Jerry is one of the, you know, one of the best assistant coaches that I've ever worked mm-hmm. with. He had just a great passion, very, you know, very good football, just pure football coach, fundamentals, had a great way with the players where there was a lot of positive energy, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of hard work, but you know, still a lot of smiles going on at the same time. And it was he had a real good chemistry with those players at Detroit. It was a good staff with Fritz Schirmer and Floyd Reese and, you know, Jerry. It was There are a lot of good coaches up there. I learned a lot from all those guys.
Plus, he leaves tickets for Elvis. Right?
Yeah,
connected
I mean,
to Elvis.
Yeah, now there's a whole other side of Jerry that's pretty entertaining.
WWF-style battles in the locker room that he pretty well engaged in and refereed. There's some great Jerry Glanville stories.
Oh, this is all kind of before that.
No, that's too bad.
Say he was cutting
his
teeth.
Because that's my favorite.
Yeah.
All right, it's time for our coach's question of the week. It's brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. The all-new Mercedes-Benz CLA has arrived. See them on the web at mbusa.com. This comes from Jim, who's in Medford, who notes that there were five football coaches, head coaches in the NFL, who were fired today. Will you reach out to any of them? Do you spend any time thinking about those coaches or their families?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure I'll be speaking with some of them. And there's some assistants in that boat too. I mean, look, when you go through your career and you spend time with, coaches and their families at somewhere along the line, whether you're on a staff with them or whether you're you know them in other ways, I definitely take the time to reach out to them when things aren't going well. It doesn't not necessarily when they lose their job, but it could be after a tough loss or something else, and I've had many coaches do that to me as well, and it really means a lot when something's not. I mean, it's easy to get text or congratulatory messages when things go good, and that's great, but it's the ones you really remember are the ones when you only get one or two after something really negative has happened, or you've had a real bad season, bad game, bad situation, and those, when you only get a couple of those, you really remember who those who those came from. And if you've got friends there, they're friends whether things are going good well or not going well for them. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a tough business. Today's a tough day. There's a lot of people that are, losing their jobs today, and not just head coaches, but all the people that go with them and the staff. And let's face it, when the coach goes, the players are the next ones to go. So the new coach will come in. He'll make a lot of changes. There'll be a lot of turnover in those organizations, as there always is. And, that's a lot of people that are, being relocated or, uprooted in one way or another. So I'd say when they fire the head coach, that's the start of a cycle. And it'll continue for a while.
Any resolutions tomorrow night, New Year's Eve? Do you do New Year's resolutions?
For the usual ones.
Lose a little weight.
Yeah, drop 10
guy.
Pounds. Yeah, right.
Sounds good.
So, yeah.
Well, Coach, we'll talk to you next.
Big thing, I think, is just really for this team to take advantage of the opportunity that we have, and we're in good position to continue our season. Just really need everybody, each one of us, each coach, each player, everybody involved, to just put out our absolute best in the next couple weeks of preparation, be ready for our next game, and just try to get to our absolute highest ability and performance level, and see where that takes us. And that's that'll be a goal for this year.
We certainly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Happy New Year.
Sounds good. Thank you.
There you go. There's Bill Belichick.